As she was hanging her bag on the back of her chair, a guy at the bar chatting up a young woman spilling out of a dress a couple of sizes too small caught her eye and gave a little wave. Katie nodded back politely and turned back to Reese, rolling her eyes. Ugh, that guy is the worst. Reese shifted his eyes from Katie to the Romeo at the bar, recognizing him as a cable news personality, light on substance and heavy on hair products.
Not to be gossipy,
she said conspiratorially,
but he is such a creep.
Reese raised an eyebrow.
That girl is a new producer, about a year out of college. Guess how he met his third and current wife, who is at home with the kids.
Producer, Reese ventured.
Exactly.
Doesn't he have a book out?
Oh, yes. A New York Times bestseller. Guess how that happened?
No idea.
You need to suffer through an evening of cable news. That should be all you need to figure it out. I wouldn't mind as much if he wasn't so slimy. I refuse to even do his show. It's guys like him that make me seriously consider getting out of the news business.
Sounds like a real treat.
On to more pleasant topics. How was your week?
Katie asked, knowing Reese would have to be guarded about his final weeks at Camp Peary.
Are all those grad school co-eds behaving themselves?
The CIA's Camp Peary was commonly known as the world's most exclusive dating service. Recruits were typically in their mid to late 20s with graduate degrees from the nation's most elite bastions of academia. That they were under intense pressure for the better part of a year and were restricted from talking about their training with anyone outside the circle made for some intense relationships. The farm was responsible for more than a few marriages, as well as a slew of divorces. Katie was familiar with government agencies, as one of the most recognizable journalists in the Beltway, due to her book about the embassy annex attack in Benghazi, aptly titled The Benghazi Betrayal. Katie had interviewed a host of current and former CIA staff officers and contractors. Her exposé on the conspiracy to kill Reese's team in the mountains of Afghanistan by a cabal of government-connected financiers only raised her profile as one of the country's most respected investigative journalists.
Well, it was, interesting.
Oh, do tell,
Katie teased.
I met with the president on Tuesday.
So have you decided? Want an appetizer? Katie dropped her menu on her plate.
You what? You mean he came down from D.C. to address your class?
No, I mean he sent a helicopter and flew me up to Camp David. What do you think, calamari or caprese?
Are you serious? What did he want?
That's classified. I think I'll start with the carpaccio. Salads look good, too. I love this place.
James! How long were you there?
About 24 hours. Did you know that Brezhnev almost crashed a Lincoln with Nixon in the passenger seat joyriding around the perimeter?
I was not aware,
Katie said, suddenly serious. What are you thinking for your main? Filets here are fantastic.
James Reese. The President of the United States does not just summon a CIA recruit to Camp David to give him what I'm sure is a fascinating history.
Reese put down his menu and looked into the deep blue eyes of the woman with whom he'd fallen in love.
True. He wanted to discuss the events in Odessa. He said he might not even be in the seat if it hadn't been for Freddie saving President Grimes.
Reese felt more than a tinge of guilt for not telling Katie the whole truth, but what was he supposed to say? The President of the United States got himself elected to the highest office in the land to wage a personal war of retribution against those he believed helped facilitate the attacks of 9/11 that killed his fiancée.
Did he ask you about Russia?
Interestingly enough, that didn't come up. Did you know that FDR and Churchill planned D-Day there?
I did know that,
Katie acknowledged, still skeptical. Their waiter interrupted just in time.
Have you decided?
He asked. What are the specials tonight? Reese asked, trying to draw out the disruption. He smiled at Katie, who shook her head, knowing exactly what he was doing.
Men could be so transparent.
They ordered appetizers and main courses, handing their menus back to the waiter, before leaning back toward one another to continue their conversation.
Change of topic, Reese declared. What have you been up to this week?
Well, I most certainly did not meet privately with the president, but I am in the middle of a fascinating investigation that my friend Haley Garrett is helping me with.
Isn't she the one that works at the CDC? Reese asked, using the acronym for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
That's her. We were roommates at Davis before I changed my major and transferred to Berkeley. She was on the pre-med track, always talking about wanting to work with Doctors Without Borders, which she eventually did. She volunteered with them in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. It changed her.
How so? Reese asked, taking a sip of his wine, remembering how Africa gets in your blood.
She was always a free spirit, but seeing so many people, particularly children, die of malaria, Ebola, Zika, cholera, yellow fever, even bubonic plague, took her down a different path. She came back and got a master's in public health and did a residency in internal medicine. She's now at the CDC specializing in infectious diseases.
I'm glad somebody does it, Reese said.
As you may or may not have noticed, I have been devoting columns to Russian government mafia collusion.
I hadn't noticed, Reese responded with a hint of sarcasm. They'd had more than a few conversations on the subject, Reese advising her against poking the bear and Katie standing strong for the principles of her profession. It was her way of fighting back. When the Bratva tried to kill them both in Montana, Reese went to guns. Katie's weapons were her words and her platform.
Haley and I were talking about that very same thing.
What did she say?
She sounded an awful lot like you, Mr. Reese,
Katie said, swirling her wine in her glass and holding it up to the candlelight. Before changing majors, Katie had been in the viticulture and enology program at UC Davis. She knew her wines. I like her already. Their appetizers arrived, and Reese dug into the carpaccio while Katie picked at the caprese, choosing her next words carefully.
She also said something that got me thinking.
And what was that?
When she was in the Congo, they heard about a village a couple hundred miles northeast where there had been an outbreak of hemorrhagic fever.
Like Ebola?
Yes. What do you know about it?
We did some training in bio and chemical weapons in the teams in case we were ever tasked with hitting a WMD facility. Did some full mission profile exercises out on a base in Utah that's set up for that type of scenario. Not a mission any of us were dying to do. Other than that, just what I read in the hot zone. True story, if I remember correctly.
That's right. It was about a scare they had just down the street in Reston, Virginia, back in 1989. They contained it. It didn't get out of control. Anyway, she told me that they had heard rumors of Russian military advisors working in the area. When I heard that, I put my reporter hat on.
And?
Russian arms dealers and advisors have been going in and out of Africa for a generation. It is one of the least talked about battlegrounds of the Cold War, so that wasn't surprising. What was surprising were the other rumors.
Other rumors?
That the Russians had been using villages as test subjects for their bioweapons programs since the early 60s.
Test subjects?
I hadn't really thought about it before, so I did my research. Between 1976 and 2020, there were 28 documented hemorrhagic fever outbreaks in Africa. All were assumed to be natural occurrences. Typically, the World Health Organization and various NGOs go in to treat infected people, take samples, and conduct research. There are firsthand reports of Congolese soldiers massacring entire villages and burning them to the ground to control the spread.
I hate to say this, but that's not shocking. Human life tends to have a different value in certain parts of the world.
And sometimes in our very own part of it,
Katie concluded. Though it had not been her intent, Reese's memories flashed back to the smiling faces of his young daughter and beautiful wife.
Very true, Reese said, looking into the cherry red wine in his glass.
When Haley and her team arrived at the village the following day, do you know what they found?
I hate to even speculate.
Nothing.
Nothing.
The village had been incinerated. Not just burned to the ground, but wiped off the map.
You said that was common practice.
Yes, but Haley said this was different. There was a huge crater where the village should have been, and the jungle was a charred ruin for what seemed like miles in every direction.
A crater? From a bomb?
That's what she said.
Did she get any pictures?
They did, but it was back before everything was cloud-based. On their way back to Kinshasa, they were stopped at a roadblock. They were accused of being spies. She swears there were Russian mercenaries assisting the indigenous military personnel manning the checkpoint. All their phones, cameras, and computers were confiscated. They were ordered out of the country the following day.
They're lucky they weren't killed. African dictators don't mess around over there, Reese said, remembering his own experience with Rafe working on a hunting concession back in their college days.
I did a little more digging. What she's describing could have been the result of an FAE.
A fuel air explosive?
That's right. Do you know how they work?
I don't have much experience with them, but I've seen video of some tests the Air Force did at China Lake. Huge canister dropped by a parachute. If memory serves, an initial charge disperses the fuel over the target, and then multiple secondary charges ignite it. Looks like a nuclear explosion.
That's the general idea,
Katie confirmed.
We used them in Vietnam. The Soviets used them in a border dispute with China in 1969 and in Afghanistan in the 80s. In fact, it is the largest non-nuclear device in our arsenal and in the arsenal of Russia. The Russians call them vacuum bombs.
They both took a moment to collect their thoughts as the waiter placed their main courses on the table.
Can I get you anything else?
He asked. Reese eyed the bottle of wine. I think we're good for now, Katie.
This looks delicious, thank you.
Their server nodded. You think the Russians used an FAE to control an outbreak? Reese asked when their waiter was a safe distance away.
Yes, but I believe there's more to it.
Such as?
It's possible these outbreaks are not naturally occurring.
Reese slowed his chewing and chased the tender meat down with a large sip of wine. You think the Russians were testing a bioweapon on villagers in Africa, and when they got what they wanted, they cleaned it all up with an FAE?
We know that back in the Soviet days, the Russian military began collecting various strains of hemorrhagic viruses in Africa. They were and still are embedded in a host of African nations. I think they took samples back to the Soviet Union and weaponized them. More information on the Soviet bioweapons program has come to light in recent years. It even had a name, Biopreparat. We are now finding out that there were hemorrhagic virus outbreaks in the Soviet Union in the 70s and 80s that were covered up. These are tropical diseases, Reese, not something you find outside Africa. The Russians were weaponizing some of the deadliest pathogens known to man. They also needed to test them. What better place to test a bioweapon than in a place where its effects would look like a naturally occurring event to the rest of the world? They refined their weapons in human test subjects, and if it looked like it was going to spread, they wiped the test village off the face of the earth.
Reese took it all in. And you want to expose it?
I do, but I need proof. I need to talk with a doctor involved in the program or a pilot who dropped a bomb.
And what brought all that up to begin with? Reese asked.
There was another outbreak.
In Africa?
Yes, in Angola. Every time hemorrhagic fever breaks out, the World Health Organization is alerted. The CDC monitors the outbreak. They do what they can, working with NGOs to treat infected people and contain the spread. Depending on the severity, Haley will take a team in to assist and bring back samples to study and compare to previous outbreaks, looking for mutations. Viruses adapt, just like the enemy, Reese,
she said, framing it in terms he would understand. Do I remember that her husband worked at Fort Detrick? A scientist or doctor as well, right?
Ah, you do pay attention when I talk about my friends.
Steel trap, Reese said, tapping his temple with his finger and giving her a wink. What are your next steps?
I need to track down some Russian defectors.
There's nothing I can do to discourage you from doing this, is there?
Nope.
I didn't think so. Well, be careful.
While you were working to prove that a major world power violated an international bioweapons treaty, I have another week of training. My class is going to Harvey Point in North Carolina. That might be classified, but if you want any specifics, you can just Google it. All the information is out there in cyberspace. I know a lot of the instructors. It's the improvised weapons course, James Bond and MacGyver stuff. The grad students love it.
Well, don't you go getting all smitten with any of those young female spies,
Katie said, pointing her fork at the former SEAL. Speaking of smitten, Reese said, pulling a box from his pocket. It's not a ring, so don't get nervous, he said, smiling. Just a little something. Katie put her hand to her heart.
James, you did not have to do that.
She opened the box and looked down at a gleaming diamond pendant in a platinum setting with chain.
But I'm glad you did. It's beautiful, James. I love it.
I know I missed your birthday while I was away, and I wanted to say I'm sorry.
You're sorry for what?
For leaving the way I did. I was so focused on the mission, I didn't stop to think about anything else. I had the opportunity to go after Gray and finish it. I couldn't have him coming after you again. Katie saw the candlelight reflected in the dark green eyes of the man who had killed for her. She swallowed, knowing that he was capable of intense violence and intense passion. She had first-hand experience with both. I had one of Wraith's outfitters bring it down from the Northwest Territories. I had no idea Canada was such a big player in the diamond industry. Jonathan Hastings knows Martin Katz, so he set the stone for you.
So fancy, she said. I had no idea you had such refined taste.
Katie pulled the stone from the box and brushed her blonde hair aside as she tilted her head to clasp the catch behind her neck.
Well, what do you think?
She asked. It's striking, but not nearly as stunning as who's wearing it. You look beautiful.
Oh, stop it, Mr. Reese. You are going to make me blush.
What do you say we settle up and get out of here? Reese asked.
You think this diamond means you're getting lucky tonight?
One can hope.
I thought you told me that hope is not a course of action.
I did, hence the diamond, the former frogman said, pointing to the rare gem around the reporter's neck.
Your place or mine?
Katie asked with a gleam in her eye. Reese signaled the waiter for the check. Yours is closer.
We can have dessert at my condo.
I'm in. What are you serving?
You're looking at it.
Chapter 14. They hit the street arm in arm, bundled up against the evening chill. Katie noted Reese's eyes scanning up and down the street, moving their way back over the windows and rooftops. Old habits die hard. He had been a little more on edge lately, perhaps due to the CIA training. Katie knew it involved a lot of basic spy tradecraft, surveillance detection, driving, and asset assessment and recruitment. Katie had been unsuccessful in getting him to open up about his trek across Siberia. She knew he was alone for 6 months and had somehow made it from Medny Island off the Kamchatka Peninsula, more than 1,000 miles into the interior in search of his prey. She could only imagine the demons he'd wrestled alone, cold, tired, and hungry. How he had ventured from the Russian interior to the Central African Republic remained a mystery. She knew that from the American embassy in Bangui, the CIA had stepped in and brought him home. Since his return, he'd made a point of taking her to the range and running drills with her Glock 19 and Bravo Company AR topped with an Aimpoint Micro Red Dot optic. She was pleasantly surprised that tonight's gift was jewelry and not a blade, gun, or weapon of some sort. Both her firearms were legal in Virginia, but if she forgot and drove over the invisible boundary into the District of Columbia, she risked imprisonment. Beware of the government that fears your guns. In less than the distance of a foot, she'd go from law-abiding citizen to felon. Citizens could be trusted in Virginia, but not in D.C., though even that could change. Virginia had been trending away from the state motto so boldly emblazoned on their official state seal and flag, Sic Semper Tyrannis, thus always to tyrants. She'd written a few articles for Town Hall and National Review on the irony of politicians calling to defund the police while surrounding themselves and their families with armed security paid for by the taxpayers. More often than not, these were the same politicians taking active measures to ensure private citizens could not own firearms. The irony seemed to be lost on the mob, but not on Katie. She proposed that any politician who supported legislation to defund law enforcement should also be responsible for funding their own security. How they could live with themselves in a constant state of hypocrisy, Katie would never comprehend. As long as she had a platform, she was going to hold them accountable. That was the responsibility of a free press, or what was left of it. Knowing that husbands or boyfriends were inevitably the worst teachers due to relationship dynamics, Reese had